Welcome to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
And I'm Ryaz Hall.
Was that exciting where I waited really long to say what you were listening to? Were you wondering what podcast this was?
I was. I was wondering, has a dance party broken out in my house? Is this suddenly a wild nightclub? But what is happening here?
Luckily, that is not the case. Instead, this is the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley, you are Ryaz Hall, and we are going to talk about reality shows that we watched.
Yes, we are.
Now, it's been 2 weeks since an episode, which is bad planning because all of a sudden, all the shows are playing at the same time.
I know. Finally, we have stuff to talk about, and yet here we are, not talking about it.
Well, this is the opening show banter. Are you enjoying it?
Does it matter if I'm enjoying it as long as our loyal listeners are enjoying it?
I go the other way. I'd rather you enjoy it than they enjoy it.
Sweet!
I know you. They're just anonymous ears out there.
Ew, anonymous ears.
So, I want to get straight to Ink Master, if that's okay.
Sure. I would love to go to Ink Master.
Really?
I would.
Would you actually, like, apparently what they need is people who are willing to walk in and say, I want a maze tattoo. I don't care what style, and I'm willing to insist that it be on the most painful part of my body.
I would like it on the most painful part of my body, and I would like it to be something that I have no control over what you tattoo. And also, if you could make it take like 6 hours, that would be sweet.
And if possible, I would like to be assigned to somebody who hates me, who is not good at this style,
and who will call me a bad canvas because I burped once.
And while I'm in pain in my fifth hour of tattooing, just get that camera right up close to my face and show me cringing.
Yes, I want my tears of blood to be televised.
On the other hand, you get a free 6 hour tattoo. I honestly,
yeah, but I feel like if I were going to get a tattoo of the breadth that they do in 6 hours, I would prefer to have it done in 2-3 hour sessions.
See, the second session I think is the really challenging one, because you've been tortured for 3 hours. Now you have to go back and do it again.
Yeah, that happened when I got my back tattoo.
Uh-huh.
They were like, we can finish this next time. And I was like, just finish it. I can sit for another hour. It was a pretty good canvas, considering that they were apparently applying it with, like, a gun. It was very painful.
It is kind of raised up, and it looks like you intended to have it filled in at some point.
I was going to have it filled in at some point, but the person doing it was not actually a professional tattoo artist, but more an apprentice tattoo artist who hadn't learned how deep you have to go. My tattoo is so heavily scarred, it's like Braille.
That is weird. I always assumed they taught people on, I don't know, leather? Pigs?
Well, no, they start off by tattooing things like oranges, I think, or maybe some pig skin. You know, you start off practicing on that. But those are things that will not fight back when they're in a lot of pain. Also, I had never had a back tattoo before, so I just assumed that all tattoos were that painful. But then when I got my other tattoo and it didn't hurt, I was kind of pissed off.
So, Ink Master, we're still deep in this team-based thing. The team captains, your DJ and your Steve and your other guy who's kind of quiet. Don't say Shrek in the middle
of
a podcast.
I'm sorry, that was just doing for the quiet guy.
That is bad podcasting. So,
I'm sorry.
These three coaches, what they're doing is they're doing some... I can't do that.
All right, just go ahead and be noisy then.
Well, I want to kind of maintain the same level of noisiness. That way people know where their volume should be. The coaches are doing some trash talk, but it's not all just the reflexive, you're awful, I'm great. There are some scenes of them saying specific things about tattoos.
Yeah, they've actually been, their trash talk has been a little bit more constructive than usual. As opposed to saying, I can't believe you put that on a human skin. It's more like, yeah, he had some line blowouts there. He could have gone back over that to fix it.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. So I've been appreciating that more.
So we've had a couple of episodes here. Naturally, the flash challenges normally have nothing to do with tattoos.
No.
One of them was, we have here a concrete staircase, and to test your ingenuity, each team has to do a drawing on the front of the stairs, so when you stand down here, it all turns into a thing.
Right.
And Team DJ did a swan, or possibly goose, that looked okay. It had a big curving neck that lined up pretty well. But it wasn't that exciting. The other flash challenge was the coaches actually tattooing, which I thought was great.
I liked that. I remember that because Team Steve pre-handed a portrait of the devil smoking a pipe. I don't know. It was a portrait of a guy smoking a pipe and he had some devil horns on him. I don't know if the portrait was someone that the canvas knew or if it was just some random old man they picked off the internet.
I think it was a random old guy.
But I think it was a random old guy because during judging, some people yelled at him for putting a portrait of a random old guy on some dude.
That was weird. So
Team DJ in that challenge did a hand holding an apple. It was supposed to show proportion.
Yeah.
So it was a hand holding an apple with a snake.
So that was the first of the episodes that was 2 weeks ago. The elimination tattoo was one team did Zeus, the other team did Hades. Hmm. Most of them just looked like a bearded guy.
Yeah, it was all a bearded guy, except sometimes he had horns.
Sometimes he had horns. Sometimes he's holding a lightning bolt. Sometimes he's holding a bident, which I guess is what Hades is supposed to hold.
Yeah, it's definitely not what Poseidon holds.
But Poseidon holds a trident. Some people were tattooing a drawing, or they tattooed a statue, which I don't care for.
No, because it...
Because you're not tattooing the original, you're tattooing what the statue looks like after a couple thousand years.
Yeah, so you're tattooing a beat-up statue. The Zeuses all had lightning bolts.
Yeah.
Except for the one that was kind of squatting on top of the world.
Yeah. They were all basically fine. Like, I wasn't furious at any of them, but I wasn't that excited by it.
There weren't any tattoos that I'd be ashamed of if I were, you know, if I had one of them.
Yeah. The other tattoo in the other episode that I liked much better was supposed to be a mashup of styles. So it was like, well, I'm going to do black and gray realism and color, which for a couple worked well, and for a couple you couldn't really tell that they were two different styles.
Yeah.
But I will say, that one had my favorite tattoo I've seen of this season.
Oh, yeah. There was a great tattoo. It was of a kind of a zombie pirate on a surfing on like a piece of a ship or wooden some planking. And he's black and white. The wave he's surfing in is lavender, blue, and pink watercolor. And it looks amazing.
Yeah. The two different styles are starkly different. And each element makes the other pop.
Yeah. Yeah, that works really well. And the use of the pink and lavender in the wave, it might be a wave of water, it might be a wave of ectoplasm, maybe he's a spooky ghost pirate.
He is a spooky ghost pirate. Look at his eyes.
Yeah, they did his eyes so that they, with white, just tiny, yeah, it's
he looks
very
like
nice.
LeChuck to me from the Monkey Island games.
Having never played a Monkey Island game, I have to take your word
it's
for
great.
It.
It's great, it's got monkeys and ghost pirates. That was done by Fame. I think I've said before, I don't know why tattoo artists all feel the need to have silly names.
I don't either, but whatever. Well, Jason Elliott.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Some of these guys in this show have names.
Lil D doesn't have a name. His name is Lil D.
His name is I'm the guy with the hat with the turquoise and silver buttons on it. Also, his name is I can't draw. He's horn on this half-devil, half-mermaid lady.
Yeah, he was the one that had a really bad canvas, which... I gotta say, if you're a tattoo artist, that means your chosen field is drawing things on people's skin. Therefore, dealing with it being a human person is part of your job. So I'm not that sympathetic when you say she was moving around too much for me to put color in.
Yeah.
Which is what happened here. Lil D was one of the bottom
even
two.
If he had put color in on half of it, it still was not a great tattoo.
Yeah. The other guy was Matt, who is that really good illustrator.
I love Matt's work, but he did not do a good job this week.
What happened was he was given the hardest technical challenge because it was a African-American lady. And he turned out to not be great at tattooing that skin. So,
because he doesn't have much experience because he's fairly new to tattooing.
So he was supposed to do a snake coiled around a
gravestone.
Gravestone that says Hades on it. I don't understand the theological implications of Hades having a gravestone.
I don't either, but maybe she had a dog named Hades and it's a memorial.
I was hoping that maybe she had a snake named Hades.
Because I know somebody that had a dog named Satan and they had a little gravestone made for him that says All Satan right. in the pet cemetery. It's so cute.
But what Matt turned in was a really faded tattoo.
Yeah, it doesn't look, it's super light, the lines aren't heavy, it already looks like it's 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I think that part of it's supposed to be American traditional and part of it's supposed to be realistic, but I cannot tell which part is supposed to be which.
Yeah.
And it can't be American traditional because the snake head looks normal.
Yeah, it looks like a snake.
Yeah.
So Matt went home with all the judges saying, we think you're great. We think you're a great illustrator. Get a few more years of tattoo experience. You'll be a great tattooer.
Yeah.
I was sad to see him go, but I liked the reason he went home. Like,
yeah,
he was clearly very skilled, but there is a hole in his game, and the skull pick actually targeted that. They said he can draw anything, but can he tattoo this? Turns out he couldn't, so they got him.
But the tattoo itself is not a bad tattoo.
No, I mean, when you get away from the challenge, it looks like it was done 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
But
she could have that touched up and have it darkened and it would be fine.
Yeah. So, again, not that many really bad tattoos this year, not like certain other seasons. Not like, in fact, Coach Steve has done when he was on the show.
Oh, he's done some bad tattoos.
That's it for Ink Master. Get out, Ink Master.
Goodbye, Ink Master!
Project Runway, All-Stars.
All-Stars. Okay, so we got 2 weeks to cover.
Yeah.
And last week was my favorite because Unconventional Materials Challenge. Oh,
They were doing ball gowns.
Not ball gags?
No.
That's a shame because they did way too much talking and not nearly enough sewing in that episode.
Now, the joke here was that we said ball gowns, but they had to go into a...
Well, first they were told they were going into a castle, and they all got excited because they're going to get to visit a castle. And then it was just a bouncy castle full of balls.
So it's
kind of like on The Bachelor that one time.
Yeah, it felt like somebody wanted to do a ball pit, but then they had this castle idea. So now it's a bouncy castle full of 10 balls ranging from golf balls and cotton balls all the way up to beach balls.
No, it went bigger. They also had those yoga balls.
Oh, yeah.
That one lady made that hideous skirt out of one.
So everybody had to pile into this bouncy castle and bounce around while trying to collect enough balls of the same sort to make something, which looked awful.
Yeah, it didn't look like fun.
At least one person realized that a lot of balls were falling out, so they could just...
Yeah.
I don't recall who it was. A lady.
A lady.
A lady had the sense to stand outside the castle and just scoop balls up.
Yes.
Now, you liked this episode.
I hated the dresses, but I enjoyed the bouncy castle.
Okay.
That's sort of my review of the Oscars, too, by the way. Hate the dresses, love the bouncy castle.
I have to say, I have not really liked any of the dresses for the past 2 weeks. They're starting...
I haven't seen anything that I would consider innovative or great.
Well, for the unconventional materials challenge, I give the designers a little leeway. Like, what are you supposed to do when you have a bag full of tennis balls and told, make a dress?
Yeah. I kind of think that's a crappy challenge.
They are crappy challenges. And this most recent episode, very complicated, where everybody was given perfume.
Those weren't perfume. Those were beauty products.
Okay,
everybody they were not perfumes.
Everybody was given a specific brand's beauty product and then told to invent a superhero from that and then told to make a dress for that superhero. But they were only given $150 and one day to make it. So even the good stuff was super rushed.
And they couldn't make anything costumey. It had to be elegant, high fashion superhero based on a beauty product.
None of that makes any sense.
No, none makes any sense at all.
So the people that were successful. I thought Anthony was pretty successful.
Right. Anthony's beauty project was volumizer, so he made a dress with huge sleeves, because sleeves have volume.
And everybody said, that looks great. And can we look at it? And he said, no.
You know, like, oh, can we look underneath it? And he's like, don't go looking under the bed, which I thought was hilarious. He had one day to make it, and it was gorgeous.
It was hilarious, but it makes me wonder, how did he make it?
Staples.
Yeah. So, I say this a lot about Project Runway. I would rather you give these people an extra day so they can all make something nice. In this challenge, people were stapling shoulders on as we got to the very end.
Yeah, on the way to the runway. Which I don't feel is a fair representation. Well,
it might be a
fair representation of what happens at actual fashion shows, but nonetheless, I'd like to see them.
Well, it's a fair representation of what happens at the shows, but for the 6 months before the show, people are making sketches and making plans.
Right. I think that I would like to see these designers be able to do an actual design before they have the final show at Fashion Week. Let's see what they can do given time and resources, not what they can do on 5 minutes with a budget.
I just want to see prettier dresses or crazier dresses. They don't really have time to get completely nuts.
No.
Like, there was a cloak that I did not care for.
No, it was one of those capes that has shoulders in it, so it just looks like a suit luggage bag that somebody cut the bottom off of.
Yeah, she could have been wearing a garment bag.
Yeah.
And I wish she was. That'd be fun.
Sure.
But if somebody's first idea is, let's make a cloak, and then they have an extra day to screw with it, now you're going to have wings or something.
Yeah, and also, nobody needs a cape, and you're supposed to be reimagining superheroes, so maybe a cape is a bit too on the nose.
Yeah. One thing I did want to complain about in this episode is Merlene did an outfit I didn't care for. It had shoulders just kind of stuck on and seams that didn't match. Mm. But somebody's complaint about it was that looks a bit Star Wars Episode 1.
No! Star Wars Episode 1, as you may recall, is The Phantom Menace. And as you may recall, there's a character in it named Queen Amidala, who, regardless of how you feel about her, has some amazing clothes.
If any of these people could turn out an Episode 1 Queen Amidala outfit,
any amount of time,
we would be amazed. Just because people don't like Episode 1 doesn't mean you have to dump on specifically the women's fashion in that movie,
because
it's great.
Right, the costuming in that movie is amazing. There are amazing things about that movie.
We may be nerds. Also, the sound design is great in that movie.
Sound design in that movie is incredible. I got to meet the sound designer for the new Star Wars movie, and I specifically asked him if he had worked on Phantom Menace, because I wanted to compliment him, but he hadn't worked on it.
He did admit that probably some of the pod race noises made it into this movie.
Yeah, I did hear some pod race noises, because
there's a specific... If you watch that movie enough, like, you can close your eyes and know what's happening in the pod race. And
even if you don't, if you've only seen it once,
yeah,
you can watch the pod race the second time. Every pod has its own engine noise. And the sound editing in that film is brilliant.
And because all movies go through the giant barn that is Skywalker Sound now, if you watch The Avengers and those giant alien worms
spaceships
are flying through New York City, you close your eyes and you're like, oh, hey, Sebulba's here.
Yeah. I wish Sebulba was here.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I liked him. I was hoping he'd show up in other movies. He was my favorite thing about Episode 1. My favorite thing about Episode 1.
Your favorite thing about Episode 1 is how dreamy Obi-Wan is.
Okay, so maybe Ewan McGregor looking starry-eyed and saying, yes, Master, does have some small effect on me.
What I like is that if you really pay attention, there's a guy in the pod race who's the same race as a guy in the Jedi Council, but you never can tell, because in the Jedi Council he's wearing a cloak and you can't see his forearms.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So, Project Runway still kind of plugging away. Good job, Project Runway. Let's take a break now to talk about shows each of us watch individually. Do you want to start or should I?
Oh, do tell me about Oak Island, and I'll tell you a tiny bit about My Big Fat Fabulous Life.
Okay. In The Curse of Oak Island, the big news continues to be this lead cross they found, which they believe looks just like a carving on the wall in the Templar prison. It does not.
It does not. Now, there is a carving in the... I actually saw this cross and the carving close together. They're the same basic shape.
A cross.
The carving in the Templar prison is really obviously a carving of Jesus on the cross. Yeah. He's got little fingers and toes.
But the cross they found doesn't. It just has a big circle up at the top. Not quite an ankh. More like this is where it's hung from.
Yeah, yeah, like you'd put a string through to wear it as a necklace.
The only person whose word we have that it is very, very old is Gary Drayton, the metal detector guy. And at this point, I'm going to say something controversial. I'm not sure I trust this guy.
What? How can that be? He is an expert with a metal detector.
He's found a lot of stuff with a metal detector, but you know how on Storage Wars, the storage units are absolutely seeded with stuff that you can take.
You're saying that someone's over, that Gary Drayton is bringing ancient coins in his pockets and just dropping them in the dirt when no one's looking?
I am absolutely not saying that.
That seems...
I am saying that I don't think we can trust Gary Drayton's word that this is a 1,200-year-old thing just because he says so.
I agree. You need to take that to a metallurgist.
And they have not done that.
They're just taking Gary Drayton's word for it. And look, it's shaped like this.
Yeah.
The cross that we found is shaped like a cross.
They keep showing it to each other and then saying, this looks like this other thing, and that other thing looks like a third thing, and that third thing looks like medieval graffiti, and that medieval graffiti is definitely
made before... From the Knights Templar.
Definitely made before 1416. Therefore... And then they just skip away.
Yeah, they're, they like to extrapolate on that show, I think.
They also like to over-explain things. They had absolutely my favorite over-explanation of anything.
Oh, what was that?
All right. So while they're explaining the cross, the announcer, you know, the guy from Ancient Aliens, who's all, a cross made of lead? He says, depictions of Jesus Christ on a cross, also known as a crucifix.
Wow, told us what a crucifix was?
Hi, I live in Western civilization. I've heard of a crucifix.
What is a crucifix? Is it anything like a cross?
So that part has not been interesting. More interesting has been the survey map they have.
I saw that for a second. That thing is crazy.
So a little legitimate history. If you go back through what's actually been happening on Oak Island, people have been looking for this treasure for a long time. So at one point you had M.R. Chapel. He's the guy the Chapel Vault is named after.
Oh.
He says he found... evidence of a vault underground that they think they have found again. They drilled down to it, but they were kind of on the edge and they pushed it away. Luckily, they've drilled 40 other holes and dropped metal detectors down. And those metal detectors all kind of pinged at around the same level. So they have another hole that they're digging and they think they're aiming at what they're calling the Chapel Vault. So
all right.
M.R. Chapel hired a guy named Fred Nolan to survey the land. And
sure.
Fred Nolan ended up buying a big chunk of Oak Island. Fred Nolan's survey map is nuts.
Yeah, if you would like, it kind of looks like that map from Time Bandits.
Absolutely. It turns out what he did was he mapped out every rock on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drew lines from every rock to every rock. And they didn't have this map, but they went to Tom.
Was it every rock or was it every landmark, most of which are rocks?
Basically that, yeah.
Okay.
So they have not had this map for a while, but they went to Fred Nolan's son, I think Tom Nolan, and said, on the show, they just said, hi, we're pals now? And Tom said, yeah, here's the map. I assume what happened was they talked to him off the air and said, we'll cut you in. So now they have Fred Nolan's survey map. And it is
whack.
Thousands of lines all crisscrossing.
It is amazing. It's like when you're watching a crime show and there's that bulletin board with random newspaper clippings and pictures and pieces of string connecting them. It's pretty much the survey map version of that.
Yeah.
It's...
I don't know what they're supposed to do with this.
I wish I could have a poster of it. I would like to put that on my wall.
And what,
it's crazy.
And what's neat is this is where they keep talking about Nolan's Cross, where Fred Nolan found a number of big white stones that he said made a perfect cross. And he might have, but wow, there are so many things on this map that if something's going to form a shape somewhere...
Seriously, I bet there's some triangles, too.
It's incredible. So that was really neat to watch. And even these guys were just looking like, we don't know what to do with this. There's just so much there. It is useful, though, as a memorial of what the island was absolutely like when Fred Nolan started doing this.
Right. So they got something, at least. They have a map of the island as it was with a whole bunch of lines drawn it.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. That's basically where we are at this point. They're digging another big hole. They've named it after Drake, who is the young man who died.
Yes.
And his father has bowed out of the...
of the show.
Of the show.
His father, yeah.
But Drake's half-brother or stepbrother, I forget which, the guy with the beard, he's still on the show and he's all in.
Drake was on the show.
Yeah.
But his death, I would like to point out, had nothing to do with the money pit. I think he got like a really bad flu or something.
Yeah,
It's some unexpected tragedy, but not really not related to Oak Island.
But because they all knew him and they're all very sad about it. And he was involved in the show.
Yeah.
They have named this latest hole they're digging the DMT hole after Drake. And I think that's sweet.
Sure.
And
we've all been in a DMT hole every once in a while, haven't we?
What?
No. Talking to the elder gods?
What?
Never mind.
I don't... What? Anyway, they're digging a new, really expensive hole that's aimed at a thing that their sensors... You didn't see this part, but those 40 holes they dug.
Right, I have seen them digging 40 holes.
They did lower down little metal detectors that pinged all... There may or may not be something where this hole is aimed.
I'm willing to give them a shot at it. I mean, come on.
Yep. So what I'm saying is basically they are still digging. I personally am getting more skeptical of Gary Drayton. That whole subplot of him finding stuff, I don't buy.
Okay.
That is Oak Island. Tell me, Rias, about Her Big Fat Fabulous Life.
On My Big Fat Fabulous Life, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about it because it's kind of a quiet season, but, well, Whitney's best friend Buddy had been really, really looking depressed like the last season. He just did not look good at all.
Yeah,
he was always asleep.
He would come on.
He looked bloated and just generally sad and unhappy.
He's kind of a mope. Oh, hi, what's going on?
Yeah, and he had not been like that in previous seasons. I really like him, and I think he's one of the people I like on the show a lot. But I noticed he was like going into some kind of depression.
Oh yeah, I remember last season they were bullying him into some kind of exercise routine.
Yeah, they were trying to get him to exercise, and he wasn't going for it. And then he was dating this girl who was one of Whitney's other really good friends, and he just broke up with her out of the blue and wouldn't tell her why. And kept saying, but I really love you, but I can't be with you because and wouldn't tell her why. And then last week he disappeared. Although last week, that was like 7 months ago. And nobody knew where he was. And Whitney was all like, oh, he's probably just got a new girlfriend. Ha ha. And then they finally called his parents, and his parents are like, yeah, we have some news about where Buddy is, and it's not good news.
Is he at Disneyland?
He's not at Disneyland.
Is he at Disney World?
No, it turns out Buddy had a drug addiction.
Oh, no.
He was doing a lot of coke.
Now, that's surprising to me, because...
He was always asleep?
Yeah.
Well, if you do coke during the night hours, then you become sleepy during the day hours.
I see. So he wasn't doing the coke during the shooting times.
No,
that makes sense now that you say it.
He worked as a bartender, so he would go out with his go out after the bar closed and do coke with people.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so he went into rehab.
Good.
And I haven't seen the next episode where they talk to him in rehab or anything. But he did post some pictures on his Instagram, and he looks really so much better now.
Oh,
he's
good.
He went in there. He's been sober for 7 months.
Good.
And we're all really, really pulling for him.
That's excellent.
So, go, buddy.
That is a more real thing than the dance challenges that seem to be making up the show. And
yeah.
That dude seems like an okay guy, and I hope he's okay.
Yeah, I do too. He's a dungeon master, you know.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he runs their D&D games.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Now,
he's a nerd, so he's okay.
Now we enter the drag queen phase of the discussion. Oh, right, Amazing Race. I didn't take a lot of notes on Amazing Race. How about you?
They're racing, and it is amazing.
Yeah, there was a beer-centric challenge in Prague.
Where you got to see some gross old men in soaking in beer.
Which we were repeatedly told was a Prague thing. I think it's just that one place in Prague. They had a challenge where you had to choose between this or that. And you correctly observed that this sounded closer.
And it was.
I remember they had to go to Saint-Tropez because the challenge said, do you know the way to Saint-Tropez?
And they had to drive, and the race car drivers were super excited.
And I think the violin team didn't know how to reverse in stick, so they had to push the car backwards.
My note just says, Cedric apologizes to previous competitors for yelling at them on TV.
We are not going on the show, so we'll never have to apologize.
No,
guys,
we will yell at those people.
Learn to drive a stick. It is literally the first thing everybody tells you when you're going on the Amazing Race.
If you are going on Hell's Kitchen, learn to cook a scallop.
And to be
fun. If you're going on the Amazing Race, learn to drive a shift.
It's not that complicated.
And possibly read a map.
Yeah.
Reading a map is a good skill to have also. But reading a map will do you no good if you can't drive a stick.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, one of the teams didn't know how to get their car in reverse, so they would just put it in neutral and push it whenever they needed to go backwards.
God.
It was pretty sad.
Team Big Brother is not making any friends. They U-turned somebody.
They weren't there to make friends.
Right. And also, they lied to people. And then they told them the truth, but only once they were ahead. And then they lost their lead.
Yeah. I don't remember who was eliminated.
The NBA guys were eliminated in the first week, and the violin guys were eliminated in the second week, and both seemed fine.
Yeah. All right, now...
Now can we talk about drag queens?
Oh, yes, we can talk about drag queens.
Are we talking about the respectable drag queens or your drag queen discovery first?
Well, we can talk about, let's talk about the respectable drag queens first.
Okay.
Let's talk about RuPaul's Drag Race.
RuPaul's
All-Stars,
Drag Race.
Season 3.
May the best woman win.
Thanks. All right. So, as you remember in a podcast we did a while ago that you can look up, had I been clever, I would have looked to see what number it was, but why bother? You can find it. Anyway, we did a podcast earlier, like a month or so before the show aired, about our opinions on all of the contestants.
Yes.
The first challenge we had on this season was the Reading is Fundamental challenge.
Which I am a little skeptical about, and here's why. We are shown on the show nobody knowing who's coming. Somebody comes out and you go, Trixie Mattel, Ben de la Creme. But then, when it comes to reading, everybody kind of seems like they might have already written their jokes.
Yeah, sure. You can always write your jokes, write general jokes, and just insert a name.
That's true. You could just write jokes saying so-and-so is ugly and then drop in whoever's name.
Yeah.
Then, I guess it turns out Chi-Chi's ugly. Sorry, Chi-Chi. Check.
All right, so who we got? Episode 1, Trixie. Her grand entrance was on roller skates.
I love Trixie Mattel.
I'm really
enjoying Trixie and Katya show.
I heard that Trixie has to take some time off to rest.
That's Katya who's taking time off to rest.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Remember, we were looking her up because while we were watching Trixie and Katya, I said, isn't Katya supposed to have a Russian accent? Wasn't that the
shtick? That's where I found out that, yeah. Well, anyway, taking a break, get their life together.
Yeah.
Good for you.
We love you, Katya. Be good.
Trixie entered. Milk came in. Chi-Chi Devane came in. She, despite having plenty of time to practice up between seasons, her clothes still look cheap. And she still looks young, unpolished, and a little mangy. but God bless her heart. Still has lots of so happy and sweet.
Has lots of energy and does pretty entertaining. So far, I'm going to say Trixie and Chi-Chi are doing the best work. Two of the three best work in interviews saying mean things about people. Yeah.
Thorgy came in looking like a crazy circus clown.
Woo!
Morgan McMichaels came in with her face all pointy. Aja has had a lot of facial surgery and work done.
Face, cheek, lips.
And has learned to do makeup much better.
Oh my god.
Her makeup looks so much better. Ben de la Creme, hometown boy, terminally delightful.
Okay, people keep saying on the show, Ben de la Creme dropped off the face of the earth. Where have you been, Ben? And Ben just looked at him and said, Seattle. This is true. Ben has been here in Seattle performing on stage.
He's been performing on stage a lot, like in legitimate theaters at sold-out shows. He did this Halloween show based on the Robert Wise movie The Haunting, I think, which I did not get to see, but I heard was amazing. It sold out. The reason I didn't get to see it, constantly sold out. So good work, Ben. You've been here.
Ben de la Creme works, just, I guess, hasn't been on the cruise or having...
Or the drag tour or any of that stuff that they do. Kennedy Davenport is back, still bitchy. Chi-Chi loves her some Kennedy. Shangela has been working on it.
Now, you wrote down yawn here. Do you still stand by that? Because I'm going to say Shangela is the third person who's doing really good, mean interviews.
Look, these are my impressions when they first entered the room.
If you want somebody to say something really funny and mean...
Yeah, Shangela,
Chi-Chi, or Trixie.
She has become a lot more polished in between seasons. Well, she has really been putting in some effort. So good for her.
That's because Shangela was last on season 3.
Right. And the top secret queen that they wouldn't tell us who it is Bibi Zaharia Bonet, who I personally like.
She won season 1. Season 1 was a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that people from season 1 have... spent the entire time looking at the prize money going up and thinking,
man, I want a towel.
I did not want to be in the first season. Oh.
The first season had some really good people in it, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, elimination rules are the all-star elimination rules where the top two girls lip sync and the winner of those gets to choose who's to be eliminated.
Now, that's a big difference. When people lip-sync for their lives, there's a desperation in the air that this top two lip-sync does not help with. However, I like seeing the best queens lip-syncing more than the worst queens lip-syncing.
Yeah. So this week's... So the first week's challenge was a talent show.
That's very specific.
There needs to be some air quotes around talent.
They all have talent. Many of their talents are lip-syncing to the club, quote, single, unquote, that they recorded.
Yes. So Shangela lip-syncs to her own song and does a death drop.
Yeah.
Yawn.
Well, you wrote down yawn. I disagree with that. That Shangela delivers a very professional club drag queen performance.
Okay.
If you see that in a club, it's great. Shangela knows what she's doing.
I felt like the next thing came up was Bibi. And she did this amazing African dance, barefoot, this huge Lion King mane of a wig. It was gorgeous, and I absolutely loved it.
And she's from Cameroon, which means it's actual Cameroon. African dancing for once.
Thorgy does have a legitimate talent, which is to play the violin.
That sounds super exciting. Is it super exciting and dynamic?
No, I wanted it to be super exciting and dynamic, but it was not.
It turns out she was playing Sissy That Walk. And here's an interesting thing about RuPaul's songs. They are not melodic.
No, they're not so great for the violin.
So yeah, that was a boring act. I mean, you came away thinking, wow, you can sure play the violin. Meh.
And Asia came in and my notes are, oh my god, she did a death. She climbed up on a little step and did a huge death drop from that, which I thought was pretty good from a platform. I enjoyed that death drop. I did not enjoy Shangela's boring death drop just to the stage. Another note I have about Asia is if you're wearing fringe, keep it in motion. Fringe should always be in motion.
Yeah, Aja literally took death drops to a new height, so no one else on this season should be doing a death drop from stage level.
I saw someone do a death drop from the top of a bus once. It was amazing.
Keep it going. Move it on.
All right. Kennedy Davenport did some high kicks. Something I call a wig spin. I don't know what a wig spin is.
And she did a great sort of cartwheel thing.
She did a cartwheel into splits.
Up onto the step.
Yeah.
Which was amazing.
Yeah, it was great. Because Kennedy is not your tall, slender shape. So I like that she was very athletic. Ben did a burlesque number involving, like, tassels. I think 8 bras with tassels in different locations. It was really funny.
Every time a bra came off, there's a new reveal and a new thing.
It was super funny.
Mostly what I want is to not see the same thing over and over again. Right. Like, if you have a song where the lyrics are the same every time, don't do the same thing for every song. Don't listen to whatever we were just saying. We had technical difficulty.
But now we're back. We're still talking about Ben, who did a funny burlesque routine with a lot of costume changes and a lot of tassels, which were kept swinging in the correct directions at all times.
Yes.
It was a solid performance. It was very, very professional and also very cute.
Yeah. Who's next?
Chi-Chi came out next. She was wearing no heels, but a pair of socks. She was wearing a sort of a one-piece swimsuit with some hideous neon green fringe sewn to it. She had a baton, but at no point did she twirl it or throw it into the air or really do anything.
I hear she did throw it into the air and dropped it a couple of times. They did not show it to us, but I hear that's what happened.
Aw, Chi-Chi, you poor innocent flower of a child. Morgan did some lip syncing, mostly counting on her costume and wig to sell it. But the wig kind of fell apart midway through it.
Mostly looking at the other queens who were off to the side instead of at the judges. Yeah. And also lip-syncing to her own song, and she said she'd never done that before.
Yeah.
Which, man.
She surely can't have sung it live. I guess maybe she did. In which case, lip-syncing would be easy. You just sing it live with the microphone off. I don't understand. Trixie came out in a giant yellow wig and sang a country song that she had written, accompanying herself on an auto harp.
It was a very sweet song, and the only thing that made it drag was that she was dressed up as a cartoon version of Dolly Parton, who is already a cartoon version of Dolly Parton.
True. And then Milk, I believe, was our last performer of the night, came out, danced around in a flesh-colored bodysuit, and took cardboard dresses and Velcroed them on in sort of a paper doll fashion. I thought it was interesting and unique. Other people complained because apparently they were like, Milk's only talent is Velcro. Whatever, haters.
But Milk was safe, which is a clear statement from Rue, aside from putting both Milk and Thorgy in the season, that this kind of weird artsy stuff is okay.
Right. Like, I think that Rue is really trying to show people that there are countless forms of drag.
Yeah, Rue takes this show seriously, and just from the casting and from the people who have won Drag Race, I feel is clearly trying to say, whatever style of drag you do, that's what I want to see you doing. Whether you're doing horror drag, like Sharon, or comedy drag, like Bob or Bianca, or gorgeous drag like Raja or Bebe, that's what Rue wants. But what happens during the show is people start getting really snippy about types of drag, and they look at Jinx or Ben and say, you're just doing theater. You're just doing a character. Well,
that's
yes.
a legitimate type of drag.
But if you're good enough at it, as Jinx was, and I think Ben is, that's fine.
Yeah. So what if you're doing a character? If it's a good character and you have mastered it, do it.
And I think Thorgy is soft-pedaling what Thorgy does in an attempt to fit in with what she thinks Rue wants.
Yeah.
Whereas Milk is just leaning into the whole milkness of it all.
Milk is trying harder this season, because last season I think that he got eliminated because he was too weird from the start and didn't seem willing to compromise by trying to do a glamour look.
Well, there was the challenge where you were supposed to do drag as Rue, and Milk did boy Rue.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And everyone said, okay, come on.
You idiot, Milk. You beautiful, beautiful idiot. So then there was a break. Vanessa Hudgens lip-synced for her life against a pork chop. She did win. And then some people went home. Morgan went home.
Hang on.
I'm sorry.
You can't jump to go home and skip the lip-sync, which was great. Because the top two were Aja and Ben, two of my favorites. And as you remember, going into the previous season, I had done some research on Aja and said, that's a great lip syncer. And then we never really got to see that much.
True. Aja is a great lip syncer.
Very precise, lots of great dance moves. In this lip sync, which, what was the song for it?
Anaconda?
Nicki Minaj's Anaconda. Both people knew what the song was about, knew all the words, had a routine, not just a couple of dance moves repeated, planned out. And Ben won because through being super, super funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the start of the song, Aja kind of had a lead for doing more sexy stuff. But Anaconda is a funny song.
It is pretty funny.
Nicki is just doing ridiculous noises the whole time. And Ben lip-synced those so well.
Yeah. It was really a great lip sync, and I'm sorry that I overlooked it.
Thank you.
Even though we actually watched it again before we watched this week's episode, because we enjoyed it so much.
And Ben picked Morgan to go home.
And that was Morgan's own fault, because Morgan said, if I ever get the chance to throw somebody off the show, it's going to be the most talented person. Then I'll have less competition.
No, see, Ben claimed that she was punishing the outlier and nobody else wanted that. I think the truth is that Ben is cutthroat and just gets away with having a real cute, bubbly voice and personality in character as Ben de la Creme, and looked at her two choices, which were Morgan and Chi-Chi, and thought, I think Morgan's a bigger challenge. I'm going to cut her and I'm going to use this as an excuse.
Probably.
That is what Shangela accuses her of, and I think Shangela's right. And I love it. Like,
I hope it's true. I want to think of Ben as a cutthroat strategic thinker.
Ben has...
But also adorable.
Ben's drag character is so cute and adorable. So Ben gets a lot of interview segments for saying funny things that aren't mean, or really, if you just look at them written down, they are mean. But, you know, look at him in his little Jughead hat.
Yes. So Morgan went home, and now we're on to episode 2. This week, the challenge was VH1 Divas Live do a salute to Rue. Divas Live meant that this was not only a choreography event, but a celebrity impersonation event, both of which are difficult, but in combination, even more difficult. Ben was assigned to be Julie Andrews. BB was Diana Ross. Thorgy was Stevie Nicks. Shangela, Mariah Carey. Milk, Celine Dion. Kennedy Davenport, Janet Jackson. Chi-Chi, Patti LaBelle. Trixie, Dolly Parton. Asia, Amy Winehouse.
Now, a lot of these are really on the nose, like, especially if you just started with the list of divas, you say, Julie Andrews. Well, I guess that's got to be Ben.
Right.
Telling Trixie to do Dolly Parton. Trixie did Dolly Parton in the previous episode.
Yeah. But I liked that in this episode, she didn't do the same Dolly Parton.
That's true. She really did not do much at all, in my opinion. Everybody was given choreography by Todrick Hall, but Trixie was given a guitar, and much of her choreography was walk back and forth while playing the guitar.
Yeah, well,
I don't.
Dolly, though.
What everyone was doing was they were given a RuPaul song, but in the style of their diva.
Right.
And I don't think it was an even match.
No, some of the songs they really had to squeeze in.
Well, Shangela was given a comedy routine in the character of Mariah Carey having a meltdown at a concert.
I thought she did a good job with it.
She did a great job.
It was funny. She had to lip sync all the jokes, which is, I think it's harder to lip sync spoken stuff than music because it's not rhythmic.
It is harder, but you'd rather do that than the Dolly Parton song, right? Like,
yeah,
Shangela was great, really scored with the material. Also, I think was given better material. And that's kind of how I feel about Ben, too. Let me first say, nobody else could have done this Julie Andrews routine of these people except Ben.
And it was a really fast song with a lot of really hard lyrics.
But also, she had to do it in character as Julie Andrews and do a lot of sexual movements.
It was adorable.
It was, and Ben was perfect for it and nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were jokes to deliver, and I'm not sure there were for Amy Winehouse.
Right. Chi-Chi, who has been, I've considered weak in the past, did a real good Patti LaBelle, had the gestures down, had the hat hair.
High energy, which I really appreciate. High energy,
which we needed because it was pretty slow. Asia's Amy Winehouse, I thought was hilarious, although she seemed more sober than the actual Amy Winehouse, but okay. Let's see. Milk's Celine Dion was terrible, and I don't understand it.
Just like Celine Dion?
Just like the real Celine Dion. 4G had Stevie Nicks, and she did what she usually does, which is gets way too into her head and worried.
Yeah, she didn't like having Stevie Nicks, because she kept saying, well, people are not in the front row going, yes, Queen, Stevie Nicks. But then when asked, how do you feel about Stevie Nicks, she kept going, oh, I adore her. She's my muse.
Yes. Well, and that was the problem, is that she likes Stevie Nicks so much that she sees her as a real person. And my note here is she needs to velvet goldmine that crap.
Yeah.
She is taking Stevie Nicks way too literal. What she needs to do is say, what is iconic about Stevie Nicks and how can I do that bigger and funnier?
Let me give you an example here.
Oh.
Joe Piscopo. You remember right? Joe Piscopo?
I do remember Joe Piscopo.
Hilarious and Johnny Dangerously. Mm. We all agree on that.
Yeah, that gun shoots through schools.
He was also on Saturday Night Live, where he did Frank Sinatra. Apparently, he got so into the accuracy of this that people would write sketches for the character, and he would say, Frank wouldn't say that.
Dude, back off!
And that's kind of where Thorgy was. I agree. What you need to do is imagine what you like about Stevie Nicks, and highlight that, exaggerate it, drag it up, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And like she was saying, well, Stevie Nicks isn't a witch. First of all, tell Stevie Nicks that.
Yeah, Stevie Nicks is a witch, y'all.
And I don't care if the real Stevie Nicks is a witch. Is doing Stevie Nicks as a witch funny and memorable? Then do that.
Yeah, bring out a pot, bring out a cauldron and a broom, lady. Yeah. I did notice that at one point Ben was directed to add more swag juice to his number, which I'm pretty sure smells like Axe body spray.
Yeah, I was picturing kind of a vape situation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was when they were trying to convince us that Todrick was worried about Ben's ability to remember choreography. Again, Ben has been doing stage work and theater work. Ben is not inexperienced. Ben's fine. And you can tell Ben is fine because Ben has won the first two challenges. Ben is 100% the front runner right now.
Yeah, so I felt like the best performances in that were Ben, Shangela, and Asia.
I mostly like Ben and Shangela. I did not like Aja as much as you did.
Well, I'm a sucker for winged eyeliner and a black dress.
But you don't like Amy Winehouse.
Well,
but in fact, the top three, according to the judges, were Ben and Shangela and Bebe Zahara Benet.
Oh, they did like Bebe. Bebe came out as
Diana Ross.
Diana Ross bounced her hair around, did some grand gestures. It was very Diana Ross, but it wasn't real exciting.
Kind of embodied Diana Ross with a few little gestures that the judges found amazing, and then complained that Thorgy didn't do anything, and that made Thorgy very angry.
Thorgy spun around in circles, you guys, and raised her hands in the air. That was that. Then the runway looks, they had to reimagine the outlook they got, the outfits they got sent home in, which people took in different ways. Milk got sent home because of a glamour challenge. So he dressed up very glamorously. in a fancy dress this time, and beautiful lady makeup. Asia had that terrible red outfit that she got sent, that she got in trouble for.
Giant pink triangle.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a volcano goddess, but it was just awful. Came back in a different red outfit, same wig, killed it.
Much better makeup. Like, this was the most clear thing that Aja looked at the previous appearance, said, "You're right, my makeup looks awful. How can I fix that for my return?" And has absolutely addressed that flaw, killed it.
So anyway, my notes for this are pretty bad.
That's fine.
It just says, Kennedy, nonsense. I don't even remember what that means. Shangela got sent home for wearing a Christmas ornament dress where she'd used half of a lampshade to make the bottom round. This time she came out in a giant Christmas ball that rolled across the stage. It was kind of fun. Yeah. What do we got?
Anyway, everybody else came out.
Everybody came out fine. Nobody cares.
The big drama when they announced the top and bottom was that Milk was outraged that he wasn't in the top and was caught on camera saying, "Those three." And then backstage complained that, basically, "I was in 8 of the 10 routines.
I just wanted to be... I just wanted to be thanked for that. I didn't get... Basically, he felt he didn't get enough praise for working real hard.
And I hope he does not go on the internet after that whiny performance, because praise is not how people responded to it.
No, I heard things were... I heard that things got real nasty.
Yep.
On the internet.
Who were the top two? Who's lip syncing?
This week, I believe, Shangela and Ben?
That's right. And who did they have to choose between eliminating?
Thorgy and Kennedy.
That's correct. Well done. Now, the drama here is that Shangela and Kennedy are friends. So, what they've worked out to is the people who are going to, who are up for elimination, talk to the people who get to make the choice.
Right.
So, Thorgy goes to Shangela and is like, "Is there any point in my asking you to save me?" And Shangela's like, "Well, maybe. What can you offer me?" Shangela then does this interview about how she's all into Game of Thrones now, and "I'll form alliances. Unfortunately, an alliance with Thorgy isn't that useful because Thorgy's not going
to
win.
No, she's not going to be on top. She's not going to have a chance to use her powers for it to help you."
Before we get to the lip sync, I want to say my favorite thing of the judging was that we had Vanessa Williams, who is great. And I think it was Todrick Hall who described one of the looks
as
being the black version of The Devil Wears Prada. And immediately, Vanessa Williams pointed out that the black version of The Devil Wears Prada is Wilhelmina Slater, the character she played on Ugly Betty.
It was great, too. I loved that character. It was so good.
And she's 100% correct. Wilhelmina Slater was great and was clearly based on The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah. Well, it was based on the same character that The Devil Wears Prada comes from.
Well, that too.
But yeah.
Well, the whole setup there where you had Betty as the intern scared of the well-dressed...
Right.
Yeah, they're both Anna Wintour, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, what I'm saying is I really liked the first few seasons of Ugly Betty, and Vanessa Williams was great on it. So, lip sync.
The lip sync was a lot of fun again this week. What song did they do?
Jump by the Pointer Sisters.
The Pointer Sisters.
Jump for my love. Jump in. Nice.
I hope we don't have to pay for that musical, that beautiful musical rendition.
I think Ben was not trying that hard. Ben was saying how awful it was to eliminate someone.
Ben hated eliminating people last week. And... had a great time with the lip sync, was hilariously funny, we laughed out loud a bunch.
Had a whole character and routine worked out, where her character first came out in a black dress that did not look ideal for jumping.
It was a Morticia Adams dress covered with sequins. Yep. Yay!
But zipped away the skirt and did jumping, but then the character was exhausted and was kind of...
Exhausted from the jumping.
And...
followed Shangela around half-heartedly doing her motions.
Whatever Shangela did, Ben would then, like, exhaustedly copy two beats later.
It was one of the funniest things ever.
It was a funny character, kind of making fun of Shangela, but also letting Shangela be the star. And mm-hmm. I love any lip sync where they interact a little bit.
Yeah. So then that ended, and somebody went home. Would you care to say who it is?
Shangela won. She sent Thorgy Thor home.
It's true. There's a sad picture.
You drew a picture of Thorgy. Thorgy was sad, not that surprised.
It's true.
Backstage, Thorgy deliberately planned to annoy Shangela, because they always write a little message in lipstick on the mirror, deliberately misspelled Shangela's name, which I thought was hilarious. And then there was the usual now redemption thing, where while you're trying to give your final bitter goodbyes, Chad and Alaska are sneaking up on you from behind, which you don't want.
No, you don't want them sneaking up on you. First off, they're very tall. And I always find tall people a little bit disturbing. Also, they have big hair, which makes them taller.
So we're caught up on Drag Race. This season looks fun. Everybody's really colorful and talented. Before we go, though, you've been watching a different drag series.
It's true. I found a show. Well, I've been hearing about this show for like a year from a friend of mine at work who kept saying, you should watch it. It's a web show. But I am lazy and didn't want to look it up. It is called Dragula, and it's hosted by a pair of drag queens who are known for huge event organizations and also for always looking perfect. And they're named the Bewley Brothers. They're not actually brothers.
And what are they looking for?
The Bewley Brothers. Right. I'm sorry, the Bewley Brothers is a David Bowie song.
Right. What are they looking for?
They are looking for the first, and I guess second, because they're in season two, first drag monster superstar.
Super monster, I think.
Yeah, the first drag super monster.
So I'm excited about this because whereas Rue is open to any form of drag, but kind of seems to lean towards the glamour, at least, you know, Michelle Visage certainly prefers people who are in nice gowns.
Yes. Dragula is all about filth, horror, and glamour. And when I say filth, I mean filth. There is some stuff that happened in the finale of season one that I do not care to talk about.
Okay, well, that's a weird thing to tell a podcast audience. Just go watch it. I've only watched a couple episodes from season two because Rias found out about this show last night, watched all of season one.
It is, and as much of season two as I could get through, but then Monty came home from work and we had to do a podcast. You know how that goes.
So, but everybody is encouraged to do gross, weird-looking monster drag.
Yeah, season one, they had like a sea monster contest. And for their eliminations, where
they're not called eliminations of the show. They're called exterminations, which I'm delighted because anytime anyone changes the basic bones of a reality show, I'm happy.
Right, so the extermination challenges, they are rough.
There was one that I just watched where the two bottom people had to go to a tattoo, I was going to say tattoo parlor, but really it was a mobile tattoo
parlor.
So it was a van. And whoever got the worst, most disgusting tattoo would stay.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds exciting. Really what happened was they had to choose from a couple pages of Flash, because we don't have all day here, people. Right.
And they both got tattoos of the show's logo.
Which is great. I mean, you've been on this show. You can show your tattoo with pride. But telling people, get a permanent tattoo to stay on this show, and the grosser the better, that puts stakes.
It does. It does. Like the first challenge in episode one, they locked them in coffins in the dark with a little, whatever you call those cameras that work in the dark.
Night vision cameras.
And there was a tube going into the coffin. So they started off by throwing dirt through it, then live insects, and then they peed through it. A lot of people peed into the tube. It was so gross.
Drag is supposed to be gross. It's all very well to say, oh, I'm giving you eleganza. you know what? The drag shows I've seen are way more into disgusting the audience.
It's true. The drag shows I see live tend to be more monster drag shows, which I love.
Yeah.
But I would say that I love Dragula so much, but it is not for the faint of stomach. If you have a problem with vomit, you shouldn't watch it. If you have a problem with poop, you should not watch it.
You were telling me they had a zombie-themed challenge, and the extermination challenge was eating actual brains.
Yeah, yeah. No hands.
I love it.
Just a pile of cooked brains on the table, and you had to eat as many as you could. One of the contestants in that challenge had been a vegan for several years, and at one point just stood up and said, "I have been a vegan by choice for several years, but I am not going home today."
Yes.
And then just dove face first into the plate of brains, which was impressive and gross. And she did go home that day.
Oh, no. That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
I loved it.
This show sounds amazing. Surely it must be only available in some kind of obscure corner of the internet where you have to know the secret handshake.
Well, seasons 1 and 2 are on Amazon Prime. Season 3, I believe, starts in April, and it will be on Vice.
Oh, yes.
Which may be good, may be bad. I don't know if it'll be able to be as gross as it was originally, but I'm looking forward to it.
And I gotta say, I love the attitude of the show. It's not just gross. Like, they really seem to reward creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And while you might think, oh, the competing show to Drag Race, they probably have a chip on their shoulder, they don't seem to. Like, they've had, just in the 2 episodes I saw, Alaska was a guest judge.
Yeah, and they have during season 1, they have a thing where the way that they got the money for the
prizes
was they had an online donation button so that you could tip the girls after their performances. And most of the tips they got were $5 and $10, but Alaska gave them $1,000.
I love that.
And
Sharon Needles
gave them $666. And I love that there's this, that horror drag is a thing. First off, I love that so much.
We were Team Sharon from season 1.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I like that horror drag is a thing, and I like that there are people out there rewarding that, because, and rewarding the creativity it takes to be that weird.
Yeah.
Because most places that have drag shows, the drag shows are pageants,
uh-huh,
or attractive drag queens lip syncing to popular hits.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's great.
But I did once see somebody take empty a 3 gallons of potato salad into a pair of pantyhose that they were wearing and then writhe around on the stage in it for a while. And I've got to tell you, it was unexpected and delightful.
RuPaul's show is very polished, and although there are a lot of sex jokes, mostly inoffensive. And I like a show that can look a hardened audience in the eye and actually horrify them.
Yes, and this show can do it.
So, yeah, so, Dragula, super, super fun.
Yeah, just if you're in any way sensitive, probably not the show for you.
Yeah, it is. Watch it. It'll be great.
Oh, dear.
And that catches us up. We are caught up. Now we are going to remember to plug some stuff that we do besides this show.
What do you do besides this show?
Well, also on The Incomparable, I was recently on an episode of The Incomparable Radio Theater, where we have scripted comedy.
Was that the Monty Ashley show? I've heard so much about that.
It was called the Monty Ashley show. In my defense, I did not name it. I was happy to perform it. I was delighted to perform in it. It's kind of a Jack Benny, PJ Woodhouse, lots of Monty Ashley thing.
I liked it. I thought it was I thought it was great.
I thought it was great too. I really enjoyed doing it. I will also soon be on an episode of Corner of the Sky on the Incomparable Network, talking about one of my favorite musicals, which is Chess.
Chess.
Hmm. It's the musical that One Night in Bangkok is from.
And nothing else.
I really like six or seven of the songs. I've seen that show live a couple of times. I do not understand the plot at all.
I used to have like a 10-inch single of One Night in Bangkok that had some other random song.
Yeah, Murano, probably.
I don't know. I never listened to that side. Who would?
And next week I'm going to be on Extra Hot Great, the podcast from Previously.tv, and I'm going to be talking about the show AP Bio, starring Glenn Howerton from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
We're going to watch that. It's on the TiVo right now.
That's all I can think of that I've been doing.
Let's see. I also appear on a podcast about horror films.
Always going on about the podcast you're
on. I hate you.
What's it about? Horror podcast?
It is about horror movies. It's called Don't Read the Latin. Every couple of weeks we get together and talk about a different type of horror. Recent episodes, we talked about gothic horror. We did take a little break from horror and do a really fun film noir episode last week. That was fun. And I'm going to be doing a podcast in the future called The Night Library.
Okay, so that first podcast, just to repeat the name in case people miss it, is Don't Read the Latin?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
And The Night Library, and that's going to be about libraries?
Something like that. You'll find out later.
That sounds great. All right. And remember, we're Totes Dyslex.
Totes Dyslex!